This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
There's a major epidemic in the United States. People addicted to pain control medications. It can start out innocently enough and then spiral out of control, often with dire consequences. Sadly, I see too many pets with an issue at the other end of the spectrum, in pain, but the suffering is not appreciated by their caregivers. Providing your pet with the best quality of life depends on you recognizing when your pet is in pain, understanding the pathways that lead to pain, knowing how to find a veterinarian who is capable of treating your pet, and recognizing which treatments are safe and worth pursuing. Who better to chat with today than Dr. Michael Petty, author of Dr. Petty's Pain Relief for Dogs, The Complete Medical and Integrative Guide to Treating Pain. He's a veterinarian and certified veterinary pain management expert and acupuncturist. He owns Arbor Point Veterinary Hospital and the Animal Pain Center in Canton, Michigan. We're going to be right back after this short break, so please stick around.
It's DesignerPetSweaters.com. Hand-knitted designer sweaters for your precious pup or cool cat. Beautiful couture patterns for your pets, including custom-knitted formal wear, casual wear, yachting, and even sports-themed. Many designer pet sweaters include feathered tammy hats, top hats, and a lot of sparkle. Each sweater includes leg loops, front paw sleeves, and leash opening. Visit DesignerPetSweaters.com to order your four-legged fashions today. Your pets will stay warm for the winter and be runway ready. Large or small, we fit them all. DesignerPetSweaters.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Petty, thank you very much for being with us today. This is a topic that is near and dear to my heart because, like you, I see pets in pain every day and people don't recognize it.
Thanks for having me on. Yes, it's a common problem. And, you know, obviously, if someone's dog breaks a leg or gets a laceration, it's obvious they cry out, they won't use the limb, whatever. What we're talking about is chronic pain, and dogs really have a tendency to put up with it and try to soldier on, and so it's not very obvious. We don't see crying or limping in a lot of these cases, and so many of them, it really comes down to behavioral changes that we have to look for.
What are some of the myths around pain? I know in your book, it really, really struck home with me when you're saying, people say, oh, pets don't experience pain as we do, but you have a very different take on that.
Yes, they have exactly the same pain pathways that we do, the same nerve endings, the same receptors in the brain, and we know that they feel all the things that we do. But one of the things that we have that pets don't is that we have hope, and hope allows us to push past the pain and know that it's going to be better if we take this medication. It's going to be better if a wound heals. Dogs and cats don't have that kind of hope. So for them, pain is actually much worse. They think that what they're experiencing today is their life forever. And in the case of chronic pain, sometimes it is if it's not caught and treated.
So many times, a source of pain that people don't seem to recognize is dental pain. I'll get in there and I'll say, oh, really bad teeth, they need to be cleaned. Ah, it's eating just fine. You know, you're just trying to make money. I said, really, this needs to be taken care of and explained. And then, oh, by the way, I'm having to remove 22 of their 42 canine teeth and they have a heart attack and they're upset with me. How could I do this? And then usually it's about a week afterwards when they're coming in for a recheck. And yes, they're going home with pain medication. And yes, we gave them nerve blocks and pain medication during the procedures, trying to keep them as comfortable as possible. And then people say, oh my goodness, I had no idea this pet was in pain because it's acting like a puppy again. It's playing with its toys. It's just has this whole different demeanor. Is that basically what you're seeing when you're talking about chronic pain versus acute pain?
Yes. And, you know, inflammation is, which comes along with pain, has an effect on all the body systems. And it drags them down both physically and emotionally. And yes, these dogs will act depressed. They don't want to play. And, you know, if you were to ask them if they could talk, they may not even be able to say, yeah, my mouth hurts, but it seems like it's more than that. And I think this is where the pain and the inflammation come into play. There's actually been a lot of anecdotal stories about humans, and, you know, dogs aren't small people, but, you know, we have, like I said, we have the same pain pathways and inflammatory pathways, but humans that have actually had mental disorders that have resolved once their dental disease has been cleared up.
It is amazing. So silence doesn't mean they're not in pain, and that's so hard to get across. You being a pain specialist, how do you position this? Because people coming to you are already aware, my pet is in pain. I haven't been able to fix it so far. You know, what can I do? But what are some of the main myths that you need to dispel with your clients?
I think the number one is my dog is old. That's why he doesn't play anymore. And old dogs play. They may not run as fast and jump as high, and they may not be willing to, you know, run out 100 feet to catch that ball, but they still like to play with a ball. They like games that are a little quieter, a shorter throw, rolling it on the floor, whatever. And if they stop interacting and probably stop initiating play, that's a really high sign that something is wrong, whether it's pain or some other physical ailment. But pain is often the culprit.
One of the things people many times tell me, I said, okay, your pet's in pain, and just humor me for a week's time, put them on this medication, and then tell me what you're seeing. And they, it really made a difference. But, oh, doc, you know, this pet is either very young or it's very old. And they go, we can't keep them on pain medication. It's not good for them. And?
Yes. Well, not putting them on pain medication is bad for them as well.
Good.
As I mentioned before, you've got all these inflammatory mediators that are going on. It affects their body system. And, you know, it's kind of a fallacy that you can't put them on a medication for life. Now, it is true. There is no such thing as any medication that is safe at any dose. And I tell all my clients that, and that's why it's so important to monitor these things. For example, in the United States, on the human side, about 6,000 people die every year from complications of taking non-steroidal drugs, such as ibuprofen and that class of drugs. But one of the reasons that they do die is because these are over-the-counter drugs and they can take them at will. They don't read the insert. They don't understand that, you know, they've got this stomach pain that, so they take even more medication and that's really an ulcer forming. As veterinarians, we have the ability to monitor our patients. And I think that's something that a lot of clients don't understand. Why can't I just go and buy Rimadyl or Prevacox over the counter? And they should be happy that they can't, because we can educate our clients. We can educate them about signs of things going bad. And in the long run, everyone wins.
I recently had a client that I said, all right, it's going to need this medication. And I love it when clients do their homework and, you know, they've tried to educate themselves. She went online, and online she looked at this particular medication. It was carprofen, the original Rimadyl, and which has been around for a very long time. She says, oh, I saw all of these entries that Rimadyl kills dogs. You know, it's just the worst thing that's out there. And trying to explain to her, as you right now are saying very succinctly, this is a medication. Any medication can have side effects. You really need to monitor. You need to stay in conversation with your veterinarian. As things change, let us know. How do you typically do that? What's your procedures? Do you have these people coming back routinely? They're just calling you?
I do a couple of things. First of all, I try to dispel their fears. As I say to them, airplanes kill people too. But you only hear about the crashes. You only hear about the bad things. There's a statistic, and I don't remember it exactly, but it's something along the line of you would have to fly in an airplane every single day for 30,000 years before you would have an accident that would threaten your life. But, you know, still, we hear about the crashes, and it makes it a little scarier, and people are afraid to fly airplanes, even though it's one of the safest modes of transportation. Going forward to these medications, yes, we need to monitor them. And there isn't a blanket answer for all of that, because obviously it kind of depends on the patient themselves, whether there's been any previous incidents of interactions with medications, but also their age, their things they might have going on with them, like kidney disease or liver disease. And so I vary my testing for NSAIDs, depending on each patient. And, you know, typically for every patient, we do blood work prior to starting them on medication because, for example, if they have hidden kidney disease, we want to know this. We want to know it for two reasons. One, to reconsider what medication we're giving, but also so that we're not blaming it on the medication if the only test we do is after they've been taking it for a few weeks. Then number two, after they've been on it for 2 to 3 weeks, we retest the blood and compare it to the original. If everything's fine and they're an otherwise healthy animal, we may be only testing them every 6 to 12 months. Or if they but then we also have a list of warnings. If they develop vomiting or diarrhea, anything else goes wrong, stop the medication and call us. And then we'll try to make a decision based on our conversation whether they should be coming in for an exam or whether maybe now that we've talked about it, yes, he did get into the garbage 2 days ago and it might be just an upset stomach.
It makes total sense. So here you're talking about the signs that the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories, NSAIDs, can cause. But as people are walking through the door, and you'd mentioned early on that limping, you know, it's not crying out in pain, it's just limping. Oh, it's just a limp. It's not in pain. But if you think of your own leg, if you are limping, gee, it must be bothersome. What are some of the other common signs that a pet may not be crying out in pain, but still is in pain?
Well, I already mentioned their unwillingness to play or initiate play. But sometimes it's more subtle things. My dog doesn't like to go for car rides anymore. Well, maybe he's having trouble getting up into the car, not wanting to go upstairs or downstairs, not wanting to walk across slippery surfaces, and really any change. Now, you know, some dogs never, ever like to walk across slippery surfaces, and if that's been the case since they were 6 months old, that's probably not the problem. But we're looking for changes in behavior. And I've even had a lot of clients say, you know, he growls when the other dogs come around him. And I think there's, you know, he's just gotten really crabby as he's gotten older, or he doesn't like to be brushed like he used to. If you've ever had a painful arthritic joint, and I've had some chronic shoulder issues, rotator cuff issues, I can move my arm however I want. And I know the limits of that. But if someone shakes my hand too vigorously or takes my arm and pulls it back, it's going to really hurt. So yes, you know, from a dog's point of view, you can become very crabby as other dogs approach because you're afraid that they're going to do something to you that's going to hurt. And it's very rewarding when you treat these dogs for pain and they come back for a recheck and say, he's not crabby anymore. He's not playing with the other dogs. He lets them approach them, etc.
I think one of the things also that I'll many times see, and I'm sure you do too, is just watching them walk. They might be dragging a paw a little bit. It's subtle. You're not really sure. But then you start looking at their toenails. It's like, wait a minute, these central toenails in, you know, the back or one of the paws is worn versus the other ones. Oh, have you ever noticed that? It's like, oh, I never saw that before. What does that mean? It's like, oh, maybe it hurts a little bit to lift that leg and place it normally. So they just kind of drag it along. So you're right. Looking for those subtle signs, it really can be significant. I love, Dr. Petty, where you're talking about you can move your own arm one way or the other. And you know, okay, I'm not going to move it any further. It's going to hurt. And then as a veterinarian, I need to do a pain exam. And sometimes that dog is just a little bit on the tense side. It's nervous in the exam room. Is that tension because it's in pain or because it's nervous? So you being a pain expert, how do you do the exam? What's the best way to do it? What should a client look for as their veterinarian is doing a pain exam?
I think the best part of a pain exam is a good history. And if you're in a pain practice, you need to have owner observations to really give you a good idea. And if you can't, if you don't have some type of a questionnaire, you're going to miss a lot of stuff because, you know, dogs have white coat syndrome too. They come in and they say, I'm fine. What's the problem? You know, that limp that hurt a little while ago doesn't bother me at all. You know, don't make a fuss. Let's go home. So we have to overcome that. And as I said, the history is a really good way to do that. But also, I rely on my entire staff. My receptionist will often say, you know, I watched this dog coming into the clinic and it was limping on its left hind and it walked through the front door and it wasn't. So you have to, as a veterinarian, you can't, and this is true for, you know, human physicians too, you can't have a real ego like you're the only one that can figure this stuff out. You have to depend on both your professional and your lay staff to know any observations, and you have to encourage that kind of environment in your clinic. And this is probably one of the biggest things that sets pain practitioners apart from general practitioners. In the exam room, there are certain tricks that I can do. Obvious things like, you know, joint extensions and flexions can reveal a lot. But also there's something called myofascial pain, and it is very hard for a dog to hide the fact that it has one of these, the myofascial pain, or what's called a myofascial trigger point, if you know how to look for and palpate it. This gives us a clue that there is something wrong, even kind of points in the general direction of what leg it might be involved. But then in the end, we need to explain the importance of taking some x-rays or radiographs to actually go looking. And this is not only for the diagnosis or confirmation of our suspicions of arthritis, but it's also to rule out other issues. I can't tell you the number of times I've had clients come to me from another veterinarian and no x-rays have ever been taken of the dog. And we take it and, oh, gee, there's bone cancer, and this is why it's having a problem. So if you're going to your veterinarian and your dog is limping or it seems painful and the assumption is that it's arthritis, don't live with that. Say, if they don't suggest it, say, maybe we should take some x-rays and make sure this is the problem. On the other flip side of it, if they suggest it, don't think that they're just trying to boost their bottom line. It's really, these diagnostics are done really for a very good reason.
Great information. I'm chatting right now with Dr. Michael Petty. He is a pain expert, as you're hearing, and the owner of Arbor Point Veterinary Hospital in Michigan. We're going to be right back after this short break. Now that we know that our pet has a pain issue, what can we do to make it better? We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
They called it elephant skin. It was rough, wrinkly, like a Brillo pad.
His hair was falling out in clumps.
Petey stopped eating and all his hair fell out.
Our golden retriever, Sundance, he scratched incessantly. There was hair all over.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite is nutrition.
Within 2 weeks, the shedding slowed down to almost none. The scratching went away after a few days, and Sundance's coat was starting to get shiny and glossy.
It's a 180 turnaround. His skin has cleared up. He is not in pain.
If your dog has shedding dry skin, excessive scratching
due to Dynavite.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000. Dynavite for life.
Dinovite .com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Petty, I think one of the most frustrating things sometimes for people when they realize their pet's in pain is they want a cure. And sadly, that's not always possible, is it?
No, it isn't possible. And I say up front, you know, we can't fix this. But what is the end goal? Where would you like to be? And this is such an important question because I remember one case I had where the owner came in, the dog was limping, and, you know, for whatever reason, I never asked what she hoped to accomplish. I diagnosed hip dysplasia with secondary arthritis, and it was, we'd taken the radiographs and confirmed it. I put the dog on medication. We gave them some exercises, sent them home. They came back 3 weeks later. The dog was obviously doing better. I palpated the dog and said, it looks great. And she says, it was a complete failure. And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? He says, Dr. Petty, we used to go on 15-mile hikes. Now, he's gone from one up to three, but we still can't do 15-mile hikes.
So, Dr. Petty, now we can say that, yes, my pet is in pain, is going to need some type of therapy. You go online and there's all these great treatments, you know, it's lotions and potions and things that you can do and they're inexpensive. And why do I need to go to my veterinarian? So first, I'd love to have you talk about the things that you found that are effective that you recommend.
Sure. And I guess one of the things, one of my rules is if you see it on late night television or if it seems too good to be true, then it's probably too good to be true. But having said that, yes, there are a lot of therapies out there, and this is one of the bits of art of finding secret formula, so to speak, of how to treat each patient. And rarely is it just a matter of giving one or two pills. Physical modalities are very important. Rehabilitation therapy, or as they say in human medicine, physical therapy, is often very important to keep limbs limber and muscles strengthened. Acupuncture is a tool I could not live without and still do the kind of job I'm doing. And, you know, acupuncture has gotten some bad press, and some people kind of consider it this woo-woo medicine and discount it. But even the National Institute of Health comes out and says acupuncture is good. Acupuncture should be considered for chronic pain. Beyond acupuncture and...
Do you really know how it works, Dr. Petty? Or does it matter that it just works?
So, you know, for thousands of years, it just mattered that it worked. But now we've gotten into the modern era. There's a branch of acupuncture called medical acupuncture, and they really look at it from a very scientific point of view. You put a needle in here, you give it a twist, it causes this reaction. It also talks to this nerve, which goes to this part of the brain, which then dampens down the pain signal to this area of the body, and so on. There's about 10 different actions that acupuncture has in terms of controlling pain and other issues, and certainly not enough time here to talk about all of them. But suffice it to say that it's actually a very complex and effective medical way of treating pain. I've also alluded to this myofascial pain and using that as a diagnostic tool to look for pain. But these trigger points can also be treated through massage or something we call dry needle therapy, where an acupuncture needle is put into the trigger point. It's not technically acupuncture. You're actually just treating this knot of muscle, and that can really help with pain a lot. And laser has really started to come into its own. When it was first introduced, sometimes I was wondering if I was doing any good. You know, I was one of the first people to get a therapeutic laser. But these days, they've become so much better. And some of the brands have really worked hard on discovering the right wavelengths and kinds of emissions needed to treat specific pain issues.
We use it a lot at our practice and find that it is marvelous. And I probably use it more on myself sometimes than we do on our pets. But no, it is a very, very great treatment modality. You're right.
Right. So there's some newer things on the block, shockwave therapy, which there is at least one really good paper out for shockwave therapy that I'm aware of. I mean, there's other papers as well, but one that I really like. And this is using really intense sound waves in order to treat pain. And no one is completely sure how that works, although there's a couple of different ideas behind it. Stem cell therapy has shown some promise in terms of being able to treat the joint itself and actually kind of try to fix the arthritis. That's been a little bit disappointing in that it's not a permanent fix, but sometimes a single injection into a joint can provide pain relief for up to a year. In the future, we're starting to see all sorts of things with antibody treatments. There are several antibody treatments, monoclonal antibody treatments, under investigation. One that's really well known is being put out by a company called NexVet, and they're studying monoclonal antibodies to treat arthritis pain in dogs and cats. And there are other drug companies as well that are looking into it. And this is actually kind of like a vaccination against pain. And, you know, so monoclonal antibodies have been used in veterinary medicine, especially in equine. I think the most well-known one in dogs is this new injectable for itching called Cytopoint that's put out by a company called Zoetis. And it actually is an antibody that treats itch. And the same way that they use that to treat itch, they can find some that will treat pain as well. And then in the further future, they're actually looking at probably some monoclonal vaccines where a vaccination is given once and the animal will produce its own antibodies, hopefully forever and ever, and those antibodies will attack those pain receptors, and that will be a lifetime treatment of just one injection.
Dr. Petty, these are all just fabulous high-tech, just kind of mind-blowing science fiction type things that are out there that you're mentioning. But how about some of just of the low-tech things that we can do? One of the things I'll usually have to say to my clients, because sadly it's just too common, is your pet is overweight. I have all these treatments that I can give you, medications, laser, we can do stem cell, but your pet really has to lose weight. Why is that so important? They just don't seem to catch on.
Well, you know, losing weight, and I'm not talking about even becoming skinny. I'm just talking about like a 10% loss of body weight in an overweight animal has the equivalent therapeutic value of giving an NSAID like Rimadyl or Medicam or Prevacox. And that's really profound. And partly it takes the weight off of these joints. But there's also the suspicion that fat is well known in people to be an organ that produces all sorts of inflammatory agents. Hasn't been proven in dogs and cats, but the suspicion is there that it's constantly producing these inflammatory mediators that worsen the arthritis. And it's kind of an easy thing to do. You would think that getting a dog to lose weight would be easy, but, you know, you look at those big brown eyes looking up at you and people say, oh,
what's a cookie between friends? Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. So it's probably one of the biggest failure rates we have is trying to get dogs to lose weight.
All right. So we know the things that are effective. What are the things that pet owners should avoid?
Well, I think what they should avoid are things that we don't have really good, solid evidence for. And it's not to say that they don't work. It's just that we really don't know if they work. And it's hard for me to even talk about some of these things because the minute this comes out of my mouth, there might be some research done or something like that. But, you know, here's a case in point. And I know I'm probably going to make a few enemies about this. But, you know, chiropractic and people is an amazing thing. I've gone and had it done myself. And animals, not a lot of research behind it. So, you know, from my point of view, it probably works. And there's probably some chiropractic procedures that are very, very useful. But, you know, if I were given a choice as a pet owner, what has the evidence and what doesn't, I'd pick the thing that has the evidence. But if chiropractic for your dog or cat works for you, then go ahead and do it. You know, home lasering devices, LED devices, certainly there's evidence for these LED devices to help with pain. But, you know, if you can afford to buy one yourself, if you can afford to buy a laser yourself, you have to believe that it's, you know, it's not a medical device. These things cost tens of thousands of dollars. And the chances of you buying one for, you know, $99.95 on, you know, off a website and having it work is pretty slim. The other thing that I caution everyone about, too, is botanicals or herbal medicine. And there are a lot of good ones out there. And I can't even begin to talk about all of them. But, for example, Boswellia is a really good one that you can use on your dog if it's in pain. But then there are other ones, like St. John's wort, that have some more serious implications of interactions with other medications and so forth that may cause a problem. So you should probably find a veterinarian that can at least advise you on what herbal supplements and botanicals you can use, as opposed to just starting them yourself. And that would involve a conversation also of what other medications you might be giving your pet. These things are really strong, and on my questionnaire when the first time I see a client is, what medications you are on, and I put down, include all supplements, herbals, etc., because sometimes some of these are things are just too strong to mix with some of the medications I would like to use.
And it always is a concern of people doing some of these things long term, because so many of these pets are affected even from an early age. And I know you're concerned so much of young dogs. And typically you think of pain and arthritis as an older dog issue. But young dogs with osteoarthritis, I know that is a real passion of yours.
It really is. And when we think of arthritis with ourselves, most of our arthritis is wear and tear through injury, wear and tear through sports, wear and tear by doing stupid things, whatever it might be. And certainly all that can apply to dogs. But the vast majority of arthritis in dogs is secondary to conformational issues. They are born with hip dysplasia. They're born with luxating patellas. Some of the short-legged, or what we call chondrodystrophic breeds, have abnormal joint function. All of this immediately has an effect on their joints. And if you have a dog with hip dysplasia and you bother to take radiographs at a year of age, you will find that there's already radiographic evidence of arthritis. Even if there isn't, it's going to be there 3 months later, 6 months later. So I'm a huge proponent of starting dogs on a regimen of therapies, including maintaining healthy weight, the right kinds of exercises that will maintain muscle mass and not prevent, encourage damage to the joints. Also, there are certain medications we can use. Two that come to mind is right away is one called Adequin. And Adequin is an injectable medication that does what we always hope glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate will do, but doesn't always. And the Adequin works really well, and it is actually an FDA-approved medication for the treatment of arthritis. Keeps that joint lubricated, but also I think helps slow down the advancement of the arthritis. Anything we can do to use to suppress any inflammatory mediators is going to slow the progression of the arthritis. There's a fairly new drug on the market called Galliprant, and Galliprant is well positioned for using it in young dogs. Not that it works any better than the classic NSAIDs that we've used all along, but the nice thing about Galliprant is at this point in time doesn't appear that it requires any kind of routine blood testing in order to keep using it. It doesn't have the same problem with causing ulcers, stomach ulcers, kidney disease, and so forth. But I do want to caution, it's a young drug. It's only been on the market for about a half a year. And as time goes on, I'm sure some issues will pop up with it. But it's had some very intensive safety studies, and so far it seems to really do a good job with minimal risk.
Dr. Petty, we can just keep going on, and it is so obvious that you're an expert and very passionate about the subject of pain. If you could just quickly have a synopsis of what the pet owners should be aware of? Pain. I know it's hard to measure, especially that chronic pain. What other words of wisdom would you have for my listeners?
I think the biggest thing is if your dog has a sudden change in behavior, or even if you someday realize that, you know, my dog has never really acted like other dogs do. Maybe they've been in pain most of their life, and that's why they don't like to do those things. Talk to your veterinarian about it and get it checked out. It's better to spend a couple of dollars and find out everything's okay, as opposed to ignoring a problem and then reaching a point where treatment becomes hard, if not impossible, because the disease is so advanced.
Thank you so much. I've had the joy of listening today, chatting with Dr. Petty. He is the past president of the International Veterinary Academy of Pain Management and the co-author of the American Animal Hospital Association, American Association of Feline Practitioners 2015 Pain Guidelines. He knows what he's talking about, and also the author, a book I really recommend all pet owners get, Dr. Petty's Pain Relief for Dogs, The Complete Medical and Integrative Guide to Treating Pain. It's very readable. It's very understandable. Dr. Petty, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for letting me be on your show.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz with The Pet Doctor. If you have a question that you want me to address on the show, please drop me a line at The Pet Doctor at Pet Life Radio. Please tune in again next week. We'll give you more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.